I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
School of Humans. It's 1916 in Chicago at the Hotel Blackstone's restaurant. Dining there is Edward R. West. And Edward is the president of the C.D. Gregg Tea and Coffee Company, the largest importer of tea and coffee in the United States at the time. Yes, the tea and coffee game makes you the big bucks. Cha-ching! Edward's wife had died several years before, so you know this evening he might have been out on the prowl, looking for some hot thing to soothe his pain. And he found someone. At the restaurant, he sees a beautiful young lady. One of the spiciest things about her is, according to one newspaper, she had let down her hair in a girlish fashion. Hot. The Chicago Tribune said she was a small brunette, a distinct beauty with the look. Anyway, she sees Edward looking at her and she's like, "Hi, my name is Buddha Godman. What's yours?" And it seems that Edward was quickly seduced. He and Buddha started getting friendlier and friendlier and maybe engaged in some hanky-panky at some point. Over the course of their rendezvous, Buddha tells Edward about herself. She says she has independent means, a desire to see something of the world, and she was not averse to enjoying it in Edward's company. A little while later, Edward needs to go to New York on business. That's right, tea and coffee business. And Buddha's like, "I want to go to New York, please. You have that fancy Packard car, bad boy. Take me there." And Edward is hesitant at first. He says to a newspaper later that it was she and not I who proposed this trip. I hadn't thought of the significance of that until recently. I tried to persuade her out of it, but to no avail. So he finally succumbs to her pleading and is like, "Okay, Buddha doll, I'll take you to the Big Apple." The pair travel in his car from Chicago and reach New York on May 9th, 1916. Edward gets them a room at the Ansonia Hotel. A few hours later, they suddenly hear a heavy knock at the door. On the other side of the door, there are some men, gruffly saying, "This is the law. The United States Department of Justice, let us in." Edward opens the door, and three men strut in, flashing their badges and warrants. They're like, "We all know about you, Mr. West. Bringing this young girl from Chicago to New York, that's crossing a state line. A lot of state lines. That's a federal offense, buddy. You're violating the Mann Act." And Edward is like, "Sweet Fanny Adams. Oh, Tom Tit. No! I don't want to be violating the Mann Act." By the way, Sweet Fanny Adams was a slang word that meant fuck all, and Tom Tit meant shit. But anyway, Edward doesn't know it at the time, but he is being scammed. Cue the theme song. This is American Filth. I'm Gabby Watts. Every week I tell you a filthy story from American history. Today's episode, Exploiting the Mann Act. So our poor little man, Edward West, seems to have gotten himself in a bit of a pickle. So these scammers, disguised as law enforcement officers, tell Edward that he is violating the Mann Act. And before we see what happens to him, let's do all the boring stuff and look at this law. What is it, you might ask? Or perhaps you've heard of it because that was what R. Kelly was charged with. But when the Mann Act was passed in 1919, it was passed to prevent white slavery. Yes, white slavery. Doesn't everyone love it when you bring that up? So in the early 20th century, there was a public panic. The progressive reformers at the time were like, our white girls and white women are getting kidnapped and being forced into prostitution. And yes, it's only a white woman problem. Black and brown women, it's not a problem at all. If you can't tell, I'm being sarcastic. Anyway, various people wrote pamphlets that said things like, there are cartels and gangs preying upon young women, and people perpetrating white slavery are usually foreigners. Here's what the United States District Attorney in Chicago wrote. One thing should be made very clear to the girl who comes up to the city, and that is that the ordinary ice cream parlor is very likely to be a spider's web for her entanglement. This is perhaps especially true of those ice cream saloons and fruit stores kept by foreigners. Scores of cases are on record where young girls have taken their first steps towards white slavery in places of this character. Ah, the ice cream shop! But was this a real problem that only affected white women? Absolutely not. What was happening at the turn of the century was industrialization, urbanization, all that jazz, and the progressives wanted social control. You know, they were coming out of this repressed Victorian era, and they were probably upset with the amount of social freedom people had. Now there were single people who were just out there doing courtship, messing around, maybe even freaking around without supervision and with whomever they wanted. I mean, that's all to an extent, of course. Also, a lot of cities at this point had their own red light districts. And so the progressives are like, I wonder if these women are being forced into prostitution because why would anyone do this on purpose? So the Mann Act, often called the White Slave Traffic Act, was passed in 1910. And this federal law made it illegal to transport or cause the transport of women or girls over state lines for the purpose of prostitution or debauchery or any other immoral purpose. And here's the tea. It was quite hard to define what immoral purpose was. So the Mann Act was often used to prosecute anyone who was doing sex that the progressive reformers didn't like. Like, some of the punishment made sense, you know, like dudes having sex with underage gals. But the Mann Act was also used to prosecute people who were having premarital sex, extramarital sex, or interracial relationships. Like in 1912, the boxer Jack Johnson was arrested for violating the Mann Act, but he was targeted because he was black and sometimes had sexual relationships with white women. One of the cases that reached the Supreme Court was in 1917, and here there were two men who took their mistresses from Sacramento to Reno. The two men were convicted, and the decision basically was like, even consensual extramarital affairs could be prosecuted. So if you're trying to get some extramarital sex, best keep it local. And so the Mann Act had a lot of dudes shaking in their boots. They're like, you can't do anything anymore. Some dudes were even scared of like, what if I have to take my secretary with me on a business trip? Can I take her across state lines? But a lot of other people also thought that the Mann Act kind of sucked. For example, the New York Times wrote a sassy article about the Mann Act with the headline, "Government Aid to Blackmailer." In the article, it said, "The Mann Law is chiefly a bid for blackmail and serves no other purpose worth mentioning." That's right. They are like, the Mann Act isn't helping any white women who are being sex trafficked. Instead, the act is just inciting crime. Gangs across the country were using the Mann Act to their advantage because it was a great way to exploit people through blackmail. One of the groups running scams was the Collins Gang in Chicago, run by the charismatic con man Dapper Don Collins. The New York Times described him as a handsome, clean-cut young man of refined appearance. In his short life, he'd already done several cons across the world. He'd already been in prison. He seduced a lot of women. He even caused a woman to try to kill herself by jumping out of a window. Wow, super hot and manipulative. My type! The extortion tactic his gang and others used is called badger gaming. Basically, you trick someone into a compromising position and then be like, "Oh my God, we caught you in this compromising position. If you don't give us money, we're gonna tell on you." For the Mann Act specifically, here's the scheme. Find a rich dude, send in a hot lady. She'll be like, "Hey, wealthy man, let's go somewhere across state lines." And then her cronies will pretend to be law enforcement and be like, "Wow, I see you just took that lady across state lines. You are a bad boy. Give us money or we will send you to prison." And so you always needed a hot woman to get the badger. And in Edward West's case, the badger trapper was Buddha Godman, that lady he had been hanging out with. We'll be right back after these soothing advertisements.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Buddha Godman was born in Queens, but she mostly grew up in Chicago. Her dad was a racetrack sheet writer, and she was his only kid. And her dad had high hopes for her future. This is what he said about her. Her high spirit and gentle way made her even less predictable than horses. But because he worked in gambling, he was often around pretty shady people. And he was like, I don't want my daughter to be thus polluted. So he sent her to a convent boarding school when she was 15 in Adrian, Michigan. But Buddha wasn't going to be tied down by a bunch of nuns. Remember, she's less predictable than a horse. So she came back to Chicago. And it's been mentioned several times, but one of the few things people actually said about Buddha was that she was hot. Because did you know that a woman is only defined by her appearance? In this book called Chicago Confidential, here's how they described her. Before maturity, she stopped traffic on the streets. She was petite, a wee trifle plumpish, with big steel blue eyes, a top-tilted nose, an oval face with a dimpled chin, a peewee mouth, and tiny hands and feet. Yes, isn't that what we always say about beauty? It's important to have tiny hands and itty-bitty feet. Back home in Chicago, she met Tell Taylor. And Tell, well, he was a small-time ham. He was a songwriter, and his only acclaim was writing the hit Down by the Old Mill Stream, which was allegedly about Buddha. Tell and Buddha got married, and he was able to get them jobs in this theater production called The Time, the Place, and the Girl. From there, Buddha hit the theater scene hard. Everyone was like, damn, who is this chick married to loser Tell? She's hot stuff. But with all this attention, Buddha and Tell's relationship started falling apart. Let's just say that Tell seemed a bit possessive. He got so mad at Buddha for all her flirtations and possible cheating, whoops, that allegedly he tried to kill her. Yeah, he tried to shoot her with a gun. But he missed, so instead he was like, I guess we should just get divorced. And apparently, he was so mad at the divorce proceedings that he left before finishing his testimony. During that, he said, I married Buddha when we were both drunk, and I found out she was quite incapable of loyalty to anyone. And just a little side note, I was unable to actually verify this divorce story about him trying to kill her with the gun. It's just that book, Chicago Confidential, even though it was written by journalists, apparently you don't need to tell the truth and substantiate facts sometimes. Did you know you can just make history up sometimes? So possibly Tell tried to shoot her, or maybe he was just tired of being with her because she was so flirty with other people. Also, he sounds kind of like a downer. Anyway. At the time, Buddha was also hanging out with some of her dad's shady associates and other nefarious gents in Chicago. And that's how she met hottie con man Dapper Don Collins. It appears that they had some sexual entanglements, and then she had some other various entanglements with some of his cronies, like this guy Jimmy Christian, who some newspapers said was her husband. But despite her relationships, we know now that Buddha has entered a life of crime, and she is the perfect badger trapper. So let's get back to the badger game featuring coffee and tea man Edward West. We're back in a hotel in New York City, and three law enforcement officers are accusing Edward of violating the Mann Act. And one of the goons dressed up as law enforcement is in fact Jimmy Christian. And Edward West is quite incredulous about what was happening. He later described what happened in a newspaper interview. He said, I denounced this as an outrage and demanded the privilege of consulting an attorney. They said I would go to jail at once, as would Buddha Godman. She became hysterical. She said she was a convent breed girl, that her parents would commit suicide over the disgraced, and that the whole world would brand her with an everlasting shame that would make her a society outcast forever. She said it was all right for me, a man, to talk of fighting them, for society would forgive a man where it would not forgive a woman. She asked the men what she could do to save herself from disgrace. and the question of money was quickly broached. So Edward agrees to pay them, but he doesn't have large sums of cash on him at the time. So Jimmy Christian and the other two guys force Edward and Buddha into a car and bring them back to Chicago. They pull into the Alexandria Hotel, and the disguised law enforcement agents say this is where the U.S. commissioner, attorney, and DA are staying, and this is where they keep their high-class prisoners. So they keep Edward and Buddha in a hotel room for 3 or 4 days as prisoners. And they keep saying, oh yeah, we're having some negotiations going on. We'll tell you what's up soon. And yes, listener, you might be like, why didn't Edward realize this was a scam? Well, there are people out there like me who are very gullible. Like one time I thought I was going to go to prison because someone called me and said I had missed jury duty and I needed to give them $1,000 immediately. And the thing is, I don't check my mail. So I was like, yeah, I could have missed it. I don't know. I don't look at letters. Anyway, to his credit, in the hotel, Edward might have been having a creeping suspicion that something isn't right, but he thinks he's being chivalrous. He had to get Pretty Buddha out of the situation no matter what. Edward said later, I believed her to be of the unimpeachable reputation she had represented herself to be. So he pays the scammers the money. $12,500 when Buddha is finally released, and then another $2,500 after he's released. But after he gives up the money, Edward West fully realizes he just got scammed. And Edward, he is not alone. In 1916, a paper ran an article with the headline, Government Extends Its Search for Love Pirates. This was happening to a lot of people. And the Collins gang, well, they are already on the government's radar. And the real law enforcement officers, they're trying to find a case that can get the gang members indicted. Edward goes to the office of a detective named William C. Dannenberg. And Dannenberg is one of the founders of the Bureau of Identification, which eventually became the FBI. Edward is really embarrassed that he fell for this ruse, and he's heartbroken. He's like, I've been betrayed by the girl I love. I've been duped by a ring of extortionists of which she's a member. They are making a mockery of the Mann Act. Oh no, not a mockery of the Mann Act. But Dannenberg is excited about this case because he's like, finally, I have enough evidence to indict these guys and gal. So he rounds up several of the con men, including Buddha and Jimmy Christian. And Buddha, she's not even really concerned about being arrested. She says very condescendingly to the district attorney, oh, what's going to happen to poor little me? Her bail is set at $10,000, but she doesn't stay in jail for long. She has two friends who bail her out. And then she runs away from Chicago. But Jimmy Christian, he doesn't get the chance to escape. He pleads guilty and is sentenced to 18 months in prison. During the trial, he insists that Buddha was innocent. He was like, she was just a tool we were using. And allegedly, when Buddha heard about this, she was like, why, that handsome sucker. Dapper Don Collins is eventually rounded up as well, and he's held on a $50,000 bail. But the case that got Collins rounded up was submitted by a woman named Mrs. J. Bolton Winpenny. She was like, this guy blackmailed me for $8,000 in 1915. Get his ass. Anyway, Collins was found guilty of extortion and was sent to Sing Sing prison for 2 years. And after he arrested all these people, Dannenberg is quite pleased with himself. He even thanks Buddha Godman for her participation in the scheme. He said, she did more to eliminate the Mann Act as a tool of the blackmailers and to preserve its intended value to society than did any of the professional reformers. I will always be grateful to her and her showing the Mann Act's weaknesses by her distortion of its provisions to meet her own ends. He's like, oh my God, yeah, because you blackmailed, you showed us like how the act is weak and now we can make it better. Meh. Meanwhile, Edward West turns to the press to warn well-meaning gents who are seduced by little ladies on how to avoid these sort of plots. He says, I have decided to sacrifice my personal humiliation in this case for the sake of others, men or women, who may innocently be drawn into the same unfortunate situation as I was. Personally, I am not afraid. Buddha keeps doing some nefarious stuff. She moves to Havana, and that's where she meets Charles Stoneham, who is the owner of the New York Giants, aka he is very rich. They had some hanky-panky, too, and he is so besotted by her that he's like, hey, come live in New York. I'll give you an apartment on Park Avenue. There she has a lot of parties with cool people, like some actors and some criminals, and they all hang out and have a good time. And even with these luxuries, Buddha keeps doing some crime. In 1932, when she's about 45 years old, she organizes a $300,000 jewelry heist. But the New York police stop Buddha inside of a cab and they find all of the stolen gems. She pleads guilty at that trial and ends up serving 4 to 8 years in Auburn prison. But the biggest sin that she committed in her life, according to the book Chicago Confidential, was that when she was arrested, she had turned white-haired and fat. And no matter what Buddha Godman had done, she should have never grown old and never more than chubby, which became her when she was most ravishing. So isn't that the lesson we learn on today's episode of American Filth? That, ladies, no matter what you've done, either committing fraud, extorting people, whatever, you don't deserve to be fat. I love men. Cue the credits. American Filth is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcast. It is hosted, written, and sound designed by me, Gabby Watts. Our theme song is by me and Jesse Neiswanger. Our executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Elsie Crowley, and Brandon Barr. Please follow along with the pod on Instagram at American Filth Pod. And you can also leave us a review, subscribe, share it with your friends, make your friends listen. If they don't, I'm going to send Buddha Godman on them. I mean, she's dead, but that's going to be even creepier if there's a corpse. Okay, talk at you next week. Bye. School of Humans.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.